This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel. President Obama announced a proposal to help Native American youth earlier this month. His plan was developed after he made a visit to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Nation in North Dakota and talked to some of the youth there. President Obama's proposal aims to provide culturally appropriate education at tribal schools, access to mental health providers and peer counseling, and better preparation for college and careers. Jassy Ross listened to the president's announcement with interest.
You can see it in Obama's face. You can hear it in the words that he speaks, that he actually has a passion for trying to do something proactively for Native people. And so I knew that it was coming from a good place.
Ross lives on the Squamish Reservation north of Seattle. He's an attorney and writer and advises tribes in Washington and around the country. And we just heard Ross's first reaction to President Obama's announcement. But he told me he had a second reaction as well.
But, you know, good intentions, right? They say the road to hell is littered with good intentions. And, you know, it comes from a good place, but Indian country has already a whole bunch of underfunded programs. There's a whole bunch of programs that aren't funded. And this right now, there is no funding that's specifically line itemed. I know the budget doesn't come out for a while, but there is no funding. And he hasn't made allusions to how he plans to fund this. The but this costs money. And number two, even if it is does have when it does come with money, because I think there will be some money that comes, because I think President Obama will have enough force of will to be able to get some money from it. It won't be perfectly funded, and that's fine. But we also have examples of programs that are not only underfunded, but we have programs that systematically have obstacles that prevent it from fully functioning, even with money. So what I mean by that is, within Indian country, we have what's called tribal colleges and universities, TCUs, which is sort of like the analog to historically Black colleges and universities, or land grant colleges and universities that are intended, because our communities are so often decentralized and so far away from normal institutions of higher learning. They said, OK, well, these people live way out in the boonies. We're going to put some colleges and universities out in the boonies. And that was cool. However, those colleges and universities, I went to two. I went to Blackfeet Community College. I also went to Haskell Indian Nations University. Haskell Indian Nations University is a BIE school, Bureau of Indian Education school. That means that everything happens at a federal level. And what that means is that there's no localized intent or vision for that school. Huge problem.
In what way is that a huge problem?
Well, because you have all the hirings of the president, for example, but all the hirings in general go through the federal government. Well, we need to hire somebody for this job. And we've recognized that at a local level, we need this. Well, let me send that to Washington, D.C. That's always a problem.
OK.
Anytime you have Washington, D.C. being the gatekeeper for doing something good at a local level, that's a problem.
So what does that mean for tribes in Washington state? I mean, we're pretty far away from Washington, D.C. In fact, we often call it the other Washington.
You know, fortunately, Washington State has an incredible infrastructure of educators, Indian educators, and people who have been doing stuff on a policy level to secure our interests for a long time. So let's hypothesize a little bit. And, you know, let me say in fairness that a lot of these critiques and compliments of this program are speculative, because we have no clue what it looks like. There was nothing that was given concretely, and so we're speculating to
yes.
a degree. However, we have seen past initiatives, and we have seen things like the effect locally of programs like No Child Left Behind, right? And No Child Left Behind is still on the books as good law, and so at some point you asked how that plays out locally.
Mm-hmm.
We have certain conflicts between that program, which is still on the books, which requires a certain amount of standardized, you know, basically means that teachers dedicate all their time to teaching math and reading. That's it. And so when you see Obama's initiative, what he said, at least the rhetoric of it, was that he's going to do we need to have some focus for the purpose of promoting graduation on Indian history, Native history, and Native languages. That sounds good. However, as long as No Child Left Behind is still on the books, there's a conflict there, because all the attention has to be done toward these standardized minimum standards of reading and math. That's a conflict.
Jesse Ross is with me. He's an attorney and he's an advisor to tribes here in Washington State and elsewhere around the country. He's also the author of the book, How to Say I Love You in Indian. And we're talking about a recent announcement from President Obama to create a plan to help Native American youth. Part of that plan is called Generation Indigenous. What about the geography of tribes in Washington State? What specific obstacles do you see towards having a plan like this even be implemented in a place like Washington State?
Yeah. Well, you know, Washington State is, once again, we have these progressive leaders who have been doing amazing things on behalf of education. Fortunately, that all of us, that's raised all of our boats a little bit, where we all have a certain amount of breathability because of their efforts. Having said that, not all tribes in Washington State are similarly situated. We have those tribes that have a particular amount of infrastructure just because of location a lot of times. You have, you know, the tribes like the Suquamish tribe where I live on the Suquamish Reservation or Tulalip or Muckleshoot or Puyallup, which are very near infrastructure. And what that means is a couple of things. Number one, economic development, because you have just a larger population pool. So whether that population is intended to gather money, resources from gas tax, right, the gas stations or casinos or selling merchandise, you know, whatever it is. That helps. That gives you a competitive advantage to provide infrastructure and resources for your students. The second thing is just access to some of those infrastructural resources, such as broadband internet, right? Some places that's hard to get. So if you look at Quinault, Quileute, Niobe on the coast, you know, we go out to Niobe a decent amount, my family and I. And you're literally, this is a true story, you're literally, if you're, I have Sprint, which I apologize. I'm sorry for that. I probably shouldn't. Sprint, I don't like you guys. But, you know, you're actually on a Canadian tower. You're on a Canadian tower when you're up there. So you're going to get roaming charges. You're in the United States. And my point with that is simply, that's how far off the grid you are. And it's really hard to do things in a competitive manner somebody wanted to put, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they wanted to put a Washington State University or University of Washington or a Evergreen State College satellite campus up there. Well, you're going to have a hard time just because of infrastructure. You're going to have a hard time tying into national initiatives in these places. And that creates a dearth of opportunities sometimes for those kids. Now, I'm not saying that's something that needs to be addressed within this particular initiative. However, if you want to do it in the most meaningful way, that is something that needs to be addressed, because otherwise you have these huge blind spots, geographical, physical, technological, that prevents that even playing field, even amongst our own people.
One of the things that you've done recently as a writer, you co-wrote a series on suicide in Native communities for Indian Country Today News Network. Mm-hmm. You also worked with some of the families affected by the shooting at Marysville Pilchuck High School earlier this year. You think a lot about mental health issues in the Native community.
Yeah.
What issues do you see rolling out some parts of this initiative for mental health?
Yeah. Well, within our communities, we see, as a result, you know, it's interesting, this kind of holistic approach, very Indian, right? Paint with the colors of the wind and all that stuff. You know, you need sort of a holistic, talking about this specific initiative, a holistic approach to education. And what that means is that another one of those systems that's failing within our communities as a result of decentralized, you know, that decision makers in Washington, D.C., or alternatively underfunded, woefully underfunded, terribly underfunded, is in Indian Health Services, IHS, which, you know, it's a huge bureaucracy and decision making is very slow and tedious. And once again, they're extremely underfunded. And the result of that is that within our communities, mental illness is extremely underfunded. And, you know, within our communities, as a result of that, I think, you know, we have literally, this is empirical. This isn't me making up data, which I do often, but I'm not doing it here. We have three times the national average in suicides. Huge number, three times the national average. And you know, most of those are kids, you know, 16 to 24. And you see that problem comes as a result of a couple of things. and it starts with this educational process where we're taught, you know, that our stories aren't worth investing into and thus not being in textbooks. We don't learn about ourselves. And so we learn and we're invisible oftentimes, whether it be from pop culture or from educational textbooks or from just conversations with people where we're, you know, oftentimes just not seen or not heard. And I think that that creates a sense of community-wide low self-esteem. Number two, there's something actually, this is empirical as well, within our communities and poor communities in general, impoverished communities, there's bad nutrition. So we talk about this holistic approach. There's actually connections between sugar and depression. And, you know, within our communities, we have hugely disparate diabetes numbers, huge proliferation within our communities. And so there needs to be, I think, if we were looking at this holistically, once again, some sort of interface between health, diet, lunch, lunchtime. What are you feeding us at lunch in our schools? There needs to be an interface between the mental health and physical health system, IHS, or whatever other systems that we happen to be in, and the educational approach. I don't think that this extremely compartmentalized approach, it's well-intentioned. It comes from a good place. However, in trying to focus on those issues that most directly affect us in extremely disparate numbers, I know there's problems that affect everybody as Americans, as human beings, whatever, but the problems that should be focused on by this particular initiative or any initiative that the federal government says that this is important enough for us to get involved in, those issues have to be things that disparately affect a particular population. And those things that particularly affect Native Americans are things like diabetes and things like suicide and things like dropouts. And those are the things that we have to focus on, not just the things that are going to, you know, commensurate with every other population in the United States, because those are things that we have to address as a larger group. This is something that requires attention to a particularly small group.
Jassy Ross is a writer, attorney, and advisor to tribes here in Washington and elsewhere. He's a member of the Blackfeet Tribe, and he lives on the Squamish Reservation here in Washington State.